If you follow horse racing at all, and you were watching horse racing in the year 2009-ish, you may have noticed that there was a horse called Blowing Kisses. My name is Swan, and I'm blowing you kisses from the basement of the Velo Bike Shop in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and you are listening to Ink and Worm, All Things Reading and Writing. And today we have two comedians, and so it should be a funny show. We have Kevin Froelichs, a New Hampshire native who now makes the rounds in New York as a comedian, and I found out about you from Lawson, mm-hmm. Who was on your podcast, Let's Read Together, which is hilarious. Thank you for creating that. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that is and do a little plug?
Sure, yeah. So a couple years ago, I started this podcast called Let's Read Together. I'm a big reader, big fan of books and reading. And so I decided the best way to combine that with comedy would be to start a podcast where I invite a comedian on to talk about a book that neither of us have actually read. Mm-hmm. So every episode we are reviewing and really getting in depth to the characters and the plot and the themes without ever actually reading the book. We read the back cover and then we just kind of improvise off of that and create a whole different story. And the only rule is that you never admit that you haven't read the book.
And that is a rule because I noticed I had like the plug of like you talk about books you haven't read. But mm-hmm. then during the podcast, it's never like, oh, yeah, when I read this book, I totally read this book. Like you never deny it. Mm-hmm. I listen to Outliers and I love the boldness of which you like put forth your proclamations and mm-hmm. opinions. A big fan. And then you also are part of a web series, The Worst Landlord.
That was something I did right before starting the podcast. It was I did sketch writing all through college, and then tried to sort of get back into it. My girlfriend, or now fiance, is a web. She does like web video production, and so for a while she wanted me to write more things that she could practice filming and editing, and then I would get more of a chance to write sketches. And so the easiest way we could do this would be, she said, just write something for you and Will Carey, who was my roommate at the time. She's like, just write something you guys can do in the apartment. So I wrote just these weird sketches where I was the landlord and he was the tenant, and it was just kind of like Abbott and Costello-y two-man things. And then we ended up writing 37 of them, mm-hmm. and we did them in 12 episode seasons, and gave it like a weird plot and backstory, and so it gets more and more serious as you go along, and more and more ridiculous. But we ended up writing and releasing 37 of those.
That's amazing. I didn't have a chance to check those out, but after listening to your little spiel, I'm definitely motivated. And are you still involved in monthly sketch videos for Norton Films?
Notion Films is
Notion. Oh,
yeah, that's my fiance's production company that she does, and she's a one-woman production team. We've kind of fallen out of the once-a-month thing because I've gotten into more live sketch writing. So we're trying to get more into it by letting that sketch group like pick what was our best live sketch from last month. Can we do it as a video to try to get into that? But for a while, we were just writing like five-minute sketch videos so that Lisa, my fiance, could film and edit and release.
Cool. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
love. And so when people love each other, it makes me happy. And then I feel like it's important to note, when asked about your goals for the future, you reply, I hope to one day be famous enough for people to know how to pronounce my last name.
Yes. So I appreciate you asking beforehand, how do you pronounce the name? Froelichs, it's a very difficult name for a lot of people to say.
You want to say all the letters that are in it, I think. Is maybe people's problem?
Yeah, I get a lot of Froelichs, Froelichs is a common one. Sometimes people drop the S. Sometimes people add letters that aren't in there. there's a lot of different variations, but I've learned to respond to all of them.
Yeah, you're just happy to be being acknowledged.
Yeah,
and like
yeah, exactly.
Spoken to.
Yeah.
My other guest in the studio is Margaret Dodge. She's also comedian, New York native, and you're going to be hosting a show on season 3.
I am.
Dodge City?
Yes. Dodge City starts May 20th right here in the studio.
Wonderful. And do you have an elevator pitch? Or can we help you refine your elevator pitch?
Yeah, sure. First of all, I just want to say you have the most mesmerizing, reassuring voice I've ever heard. You could probably be a star on YouTube doing ASMR. Have you ever heard of it?
I haven't heard ASMR.
I can't tell you what it stands for because it's very long and scientific, but there are certain people who respond to different sounds, like in a way that it kind of like makes them go into a trance, like very soft whispery voices or like tapping or crinkling or whatever. And there's a whole like YouTube thing. Anyway, I digress already before I even start talking.
But now I have something new that I'm curious about and I get to go explore later. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. If you have insomnia, it's good to go to sleep too. But the thing is, like, it's sort of like catnip or for cats or cilantro. Like, not everybody responds to it. So you'd go and look at a video and see if it does it for you. And it does it for me. So I'm one of the lucky ones.
I think this is my yoga voice. I did yoga for a long time and I was like, I hated that some teachers had a yoga voice and then like realized, oh, I have a yoga voice. And I'd be like, okay, class.
It's a good thing.
Breathe in.
It's a good thing.
And let it go. Like just like the stupid, cheesy new age catchphrases and the voice that goes along with them. Yeah, I was working on that subconsciously and now that's what this is.
Yeah. Well, it's really exciting to be here because 10 minutes ago I was eating a veggie wrap on the B38 bus and thinking I was just coming to shadow Swan because I'm learning how to do this.
And no, she's like, lady, no, you're talking.
and actually, Kevin, I'm a Maine native, so
we're
a nice pair.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Not a New York native.
No, I've been here, though.
Maybe I picked that up somewhere.
Well, because I've been here since 92. I think it says longtime New Yorker in there, probably.
Yeah,
so that's kind of what was rattling around in my head. Like, I've sort of been thinking, like, am I – for the last 20 years, I've thought, well, is this the year I'm going to move to L.A.? Is this the year I'm going to, like, give up and get out of here? And, you know, 24 years later, I'm still here. So my show Dodge City is going to be about, you know, basically if New York is dead, what are we all still doing here? Yeah, me included. And you know, we'll talk about that.
Great. I was going to look for the email you sent me, your elevator speech, but that was pretty much it. Just like,
yeah, I've been chewed up, but not spit out yet. And maybe the show will help me decide, you know, my next moves. Yeah.
Awesome. That sounds like fun.
I'm tired, but I'm still here.
Are you having guests on the show? Do you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Like the format?
No, it's not going to just be me ranting for an hour every week.
I would be so – I think I would be impressed because when I started, I was like, yeah, definitely talking to people. Like if I'm alone in a studio, like I don't know. It's I need some kind of like visual feedback, someone to talk to, I think. Otherwise, it's just like
– yeah.
It's not real. Anyways, this is National Poetry Month. Did you guys know?
Wow.
I did not know that.
Oh, well, maybe I'm making it up. But for us in this room, it's a National Poetry Month. And so I was hoping we could do a little experiment. Are you okay with experimentation?
Absolutely.
So by way of introduction, while our listeners are finding pens and paper, basically what we're going to do is we're going to read a poem. And then all you have to do is listen and find like one phrase, one line, or even one word that's like standing out to you. And use that as a starting point for basically a free write. Do you guys have paper? I'm all like getting it ready for you and I didn't even ask.
I will get up and get it.
No, get up and get it. Or I have brown paper, which is always fun because how often do you get to write on brown paper?
I'll write on brown paper. It's been a while since I've written on brown paper.
I'm a big fan of brown paper lately. I think it's just kind of funny and strange.
It's like sending an old-timey telegram. I like it.
Yeah. So what we're about to do, my mentor is Nancy Moore, and she lives in Salt Lake City, Utah, and she does a practice called river writing, which is this flow of thought, like pen to the page type philosophy, which is rooted in Lori Wagner's Wild Writing, which is also kind of like rooted in The Artist's Way. Have you guys heard of that by Julia Cameron?
Yes.
Yeah, that like, so her thing is the morning pages. First thing when you wake up, you just sit and write 3 pages and you just keep writing until you've got 3 pages. Anyway, so this is river writing, more loose, more flowing like a river. And our poem is How to Be a Poet. So for listeners in, we're doing a free write timed like 5 minutes, just whatever comes. You're listening, grabbing your phrase, which will be your starting place, right? How to be a poet, to remind myself by Wendell Berry. Make a place to sit down. Sit down. Be quiet. You must depend upon affection, reading, knowledge, skill more of each than you have. Inspiration. Work. Growing older. Patience, for patience joins time to eternity. Any readers who like your work doubt their judgment. Breathe with unconditional breath, the unconditioned air. Shun electric wire. Communicate slowly. Live a three-dimensional life. Stay away from screens. Stay away from anything that obscures the place it is in. There are no unsacred places. There are only sacred places and desecrated places. Accept what comes from silence. Make the best you can of it. Oh, the little words that come out of the silence, like prayers, prayed back to the one who prays. Make a poem that does not disturb the silence from which it came. Go ahead and free write, pen to the page, and we'll just give this a try for a few minutes. Keep writing if you've been writing. If you're just tuning in, you can go ahead and start a free write. We have a few more minutes. We're just writing train of thought. If you get stuck, maybe revisit that phrase that you started with. minute of writing, so allow your thoughts to kind of settle down, find a stopping point. Finding that spot where your pen can stop moving. Sometimes it's hard. That's a good sign, I think, you found a flow. Yay! Thanks, guys. So, turn that down just a little bit. So, in river writing, as the practice I had, part of it is reading what you wrote. You don't have to. Would either of you be interested in reading what you wrote?
I can read mine.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So I don't know if this was the intention, but the thing that stood out to me most about that poem was the author's name, Wendell.
Uh-huh.
This is a poem I wrote about Wendell.
Oh.
Wendell, who are you? It's not a very common name. I don't think I know anyone named Wendell. But obviously someone has to be named Wendell. You're probably not the first Wendell to be called Wendell. Did you have an uncle named Wendell? Wendell? A father or grandfather, perhaps? What's the etymology of the name Wendell? Wendell. Two syllables. One sounds like when, as in what time, and the other sounds like Dell, like the computer. Perhaps your name is a question. When will my computer be working? Do you write on your computer often? I prefer using pen and paper, but sometimes use the computer to better organize my thoughts. But enough about me. Tell me about yourself, Wendell. Where are you from? What do you like to write about? How are you? Perhaps those would be better questions for where Dell, what Dell, and how Dell. Okay, I'll leave you alone now to get back to writing.
Thank you. Any interest?
Sure. Mine's totally different. I love yours.
Good.
I love that. And I'm not going to say anything judgmental about it in advance, even though my impulse is to.
That's actually part of the practice. You don't have to explain anything. And the only thing I'm going to say is thank you.
Okay. I'm not entirely sure what's happening right now, but I'm game. I didn't do my morning pages this morning. And why was that? Probably because there is nowhere to sit and write that's clear in the chaos right now. It's interesting how much I like the surprise of this, being a guest when I thought I was going to sit and watch, hearing poetry, writing, wondering about Swan and who she is and where she comes from. I love this. Kick ass. I'm having a good day today, even in the rain. I called my mother and impulsively told her about my radio show. I had been thinking I wouldn't tell her because I didn't want her to listen. I guess it's too late. I wish I had peed prior to coming in here. I'm running out of paper soon. I haven't even grabbed a phrase. I grab the word affection. I'm ready for more of it and to do everything in my life affectionately. I have a lot of neuroses that want to steal the joy from my life, but fuck them, I hope you can swear.
Please.
I'm with Swan and her yoga voice. Take that. I love Swan.
Thank you. Guys are,
I like you too, Kevin.
You guys are so big.
You don't have a yoga voice, sorry.
Mine's a little bit shorter because
you're working tech.
I'm multitasking, which is not very effective. Sit down, be quiet. So often I forget how easy this is and how hard this can be. To sit still without distraction, without comfort and security of the known, to sit with fear of the unknown and sit with it until it becomes known. Sit down and be quiet. Sit down and be quiet. And let the earth move around you. I went to the Museum of Natural History last week with my sister. We bought tickets for the planetarium, and there was a clip talking about at whatever point you are or are measuring from, everything else in space is moving away from you. So you really are the center of it all. That's what I walked away with. I was like, I knew it. I am. Everything is moving around me and I'm just here at the center of it all. Anyways, hilarious. So thank you guys for doing that. That was something new. And sure, I think we're going to keep that on throughout the month to celebrate National Poetry Month. And yeah, cool. So books, writing, podcasts, words. So you kind of explained your podcast came about. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk more about how it was conceived and how it's changed? You had like 55 episodes out now.
Actually, I think I just put out 53. I think the Outliers one was the most recent one. It comes out every 2 weeks, which was on purpose because I didn't think I could keep up with doing it weekly.
Yeah.
It's a bigger time commitment than a lot of people realize. So I mean, when you're surrounded by stand-ups all the time, you kind of see people who start projects and then realize they're in over their head and then they'll just kind of fall through. So I know a lot of people who start podcasts, try to do it every week, and then it becomes too much
of a... It's a lot.
Especially for if you're like me and you work a day job and it's like I only have so many hours that I can do it. But every other week, I'm like, that's achievable. And then you record two episodes a month and you're good for the month and it's easy to keep up with it. A lot of people have podcasts where they'll bring a comedian on to just talk about comedy and like, where did you come from and how did you get into comedy and things like that. So I didn't want to do anything like that. I love those podcasts. I could listen to comedians talk about comedy all day. I find it so interesting to find out, especially like comedians that I really respect. I could listen to them tell their life story.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it, but I had no interest in doing. There's already Mark Maron, there's Pete Holmes. There's already mm-hmm. people doing that podcast and it's great. And then I think I randomly remembered a time in high school or middle school, all the times that I was like, oh, that book report was due today. And then you just kind of try to figure it out based on what you were doing. I remember once, one of my favorite books that I've actually read is The Jungle by Upton Sinclair. A lot of people don't like that book. I think I'm in the minority of people that read it in high school and was like, this is one of my favorite books now. I've read it a couple times since.
Oh, strange.
It is.
I think I read it once in school and it's
didn't
gone
grab
now.
You. Yeah. Yeah. It's I don't know what it is about it. I just really liked it. And there was a kid who was like a real jerk to everyone in the school and he clearly had not read it and was standing in front of the whole class just making it up. And he was like, anybody have any questions? And this guy was such a jerk to me. So I raised my hand and I said, yeah, who wrote the book? And he had no idea. and I remembered that. And I was like, that'd be a fun podcast if people just had to go up there and pretend that they had read the book. And I sold it to like other comedian friends as like here's a dumb idea I had. And they were like, you should make that before somebody else makes that. That's a good idea. So then I already had some recording equipment laying around the house, so everything I just recorded all on stuff I already had. It's the same equipment I've used the entire time. The only thing that's changed.
It's working out. I mean, there was one episode there. It was like you had some technical issues, and I think that's like a rite of passage. Is to have like one episode where you're like, oh, it's so good, but the audio.
A lot of the early ones I just recorded with one omnidirectional mic in between us, and sometimes it would work and sometimes it would just sound like we were in a fishbowl trying to record it. I've been meaning to do a series where I bring back the first 10 guests and do a I'm sorry about the audio issues series where they all come back. But it just started as like, oh, we'll do a half hour book report. I'll bring people in and we'll talk about a book that we haven't read. So I think the first one we did was Moby Dick, mm-hmm. which I've never read. It's been on my shelf for a while, but meaning to read it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those daunting books.
It's a hard one.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. So if I'm ever in the mood to read 300 pages on the practice of whaling,
mm-hmm.
I might pick it up, but it's been sitting there. But it's a lot of fun because it's like a choose your own adventure. It's like one of those like games we play in Boy Scouts where it's just like, we're just killing time. Just make up a story mm-hmm. and tell the story, which I kind of liked.
And I think a couple of my favorite conversations are you comparing the books to the movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if it's sometimes
you're like, oh, that scene wasn't in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Whenever it's a book that there was a movie made. Sometimes I haven't seen the movie either.
Yeah.
And I'll make it up. Sometimes we'll.
And you can tell, but it's. Like, yep. Wonderful. It's very wonderful.
You just got to commit to it. A big way that it's evolved, though, is I no longer keep it to the strict half hour. I think it's one of the early ones, episode 8, whichever one we did, The Moviegoer by Walker Percy.
Ooh, yeah.
Which I have since read. And I do.
That's the thing. You do sound like a literate gentleman. You know, not that you're like, Do you end up reading a lot of the books that you don't read?
I have a lot. Honestly, a lot of the books that I've done on the podcast are books that have been sitting on my shelf that I'm like, it's just been staring me in the face and I've been meaning to read it for a while. So I know I had The Moviegoer on the shelf for a while. I've had Moby Dick on the shelf for a while. There's a few others. And there's some that I'm like, I really want to read this book soon, but it's like a classic. It'd be a good one to do an episode on. So I'll bring someone on who hasn't read it so that we can talk about it beforehand. Mm-hmm. But the Moviegoer episode with my friend Drew Morgan, another comedian, I picked it because he was from the South and I have this weird fascination with the South. A lot of the books that I love reading are Southern Gothic, like the Faulkner and the Cormac McCarthy's and all those. That's like one of my favorite genres to read, probably because I live in a city and I love the idea of just like the one guy walking out in the field by himself. I love that imagery of just the solitude.
I think I fantasize about that as well.
It's one of those things. But he started talking about like growing up in the South, and we've started talking about like differences between growing up in the South as like in a very religious area versus growing up in New Hampshire like I did, where it was, you know, my family was Episcopalian, very loose with the rules, not very like strict religion by any means. He grew up where his father was a Baptist, what's the word I'm thinking of? A pastor.
Like a minister?
Yeah, a minister of a pastor. And then I hope I'm getting this right. He was a pastor and then became a preacher, which in the podcast, I think I had no idea what the difference was. And a preacher is just a pastor that doesn't have a church. Like, he's just that's the idea of like the guy going town to town with the Bible and just like talking preacher on the street. Yeah. I mean, which you see here all the time. There's people on the street, but just like that. I mean, they would be a preacher. And I was just so fascinated by the idea of just like being in a church, being the authority at that particular church, and just being like, this doesn't feel right, and just going off on his own thing. So that episode's a little over an hour.
You know, okay, so there's this brilliant podcast, and I will look up the details and include it in my show notes, but it talks about how we don't have that same journey. It talked about in the Middle Ages, you would have like, you'd be an apprentice. You'd start apprenticing like metalwork or something at like age 13, and then you'd go be a journeyman, meaning you'd pick up and you'd go travel and you'd learn from other metal workers and you'd go live life, and then you'd come, you know, full circle back to the village you came from and take the like test or like show what you've learned to the master's guild, and they would decide if you became your own like expert or like your own, you became a metalsmith, or if you had to keep traveling and learning.
Wow.
And how there's not really that like rite of passage when you're learning a trade, a craft. That just made me think of that.
Yeah. I think that's another thing I really like about, I don't know, reading books from like that time period is something I love. I miss that. I wish we still had that, because now it's just sort of, I mean, it's like the song Little Boxes, where we all kind of just go into these, you know, we're all kind of just, you go to school, you come out, everybody's getting the same education. And I remember like a lot of comedians have bits about this and I've thought about it too, but just like thinking back to high school where there was like the vocational programs, and it's kind of labeled as like, for lack of a better word, like those were the dumb kids going and doing all these things. And
they actually were further ahead.
They have amazing life skills that they're doing these things. And what do I went to college. I got a great education. I'm not complaining, but it's just like, I don't have metalwork skills.
I ain't got no skills.
I had to install a smoke alarm yesterday, and it was a process. Like,
I would have no idea how to even start. And my father was an electrician. So
Really?
I don't even have an excuse when it comes to smoke alarms.
Oh, yeah, think. Yeah. This was really just like, how do I drill where I'm not destroying the stuff? And it was just, I mean, I figured it out. But it was a big process in the middle of the night when it started going off. But it was, I forget what I was getting into here. Oh, but just the idea of like going off and like his father, Drew's father going off to
moviegoers, I think is what we're like.
We were talking about the moviegoer and Drew's dad becoming a preacher. And religion is something that also fascinates me. So he started talking about this, and we were about to like end the podcast
because
we were
hitting 30 minutes.
I was like, this is going to go for as long as we need to talk about it. It went for an hour. So now it's just like, if it's an interesting conversation, we keep going. And those end up being my favorite, where I'll invite comedians on that I'm friends with. And then some people will reach out to me and be like, hey, we met once and I love your podcast. I'd love to do it. And then those end up being the best ones because I have like the most curiosity about who's this person I've just invited into my living room to sit on my couch and record a podcast. So that's a big way that it's changed. I have little games that I don't call them games like on the podcast. It'll just, you know, pass it off as like a legitimate interview question.
Yeah, it seems like you have some structure that allows for those, like, if there's a lull, you can be like, well, what was your favorite quote from the book? If you had to,
favorite quote. One that I love doing now is, let's say you're getting on the elevator, you're going into your office job, you're tired, and you get on the elevator with that other guy, you have nothing in common, and he asks you, read any good books lately, what do you say? And just like let them talk about it. Or like, let's say you're the author of this book, let's say you're Walker Percy, and you have to pitch the moviegoer to Simon and Schuster. How do you pitch it to the big books or whatever? I usually call it big books. I like the idea of a book lobby of some sort.
Which is real.
Yeah. So for me, like, a big thing that's changed is, you know, I used to have to like drum up the energy to like get through a whole episode of it, because it does take a lot of energy to honestly be present and focus on another person for an extended period
and
of time.
And talk about a book
and talk
that
about
you've it's
read.
Yeah. I'm doing quotation marks. You can't see because this is radio. But.
Yeah. It is. I found out recently. that your brain uses like twice as much energy lying than telling the truth.
Yeah.
A big reason being that your brain has to like expend energy to be like, what did I say before? We got
to
like
keep track.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm always exhausted after I do especially a long episode, and it's just because like I'm trying to keep straight this whole thing that I'm making up on the fly. But what I've noticed is that the more I've done it, I usually just had like notes in front of me of like, these are questions I can ask if there's a lull. And at this point, it's just kind of like, I can let it.
Yeah.
I have things like things in my, you know, bag of tricks that if there's a lull, I can just go on to that next question. And I can kind of think while one person's talking, just like, what's the next thing I can ask here? And more often than not, they say something kind of interesting. And it's like, let's get into that for a little while and talk about that.
But that I find that's kind of something I've had to develop as kind of like a host is like this double thinking of like listening and like communicating with someone, but also being like, okay, what are we going to talk about next? Like,
it's very handy for stand up because like when you're like in a really good stand up zone, you're thinking like, I'm telling this joke now. They reacted to that last joke this way. This is the next joke that's coming, and it's a great zone to get into. I don't have because I'm doing so much more like outside writing projects, I don't get to do as much stand-up as I would like to, but I find that whenever I have one, even if I haven't gotten on stage in like a week or two, because of doing something like this, like it keeps that process going. So I've noticed like, I don't know, it's helped with like stage confidence a lot. It's also helped with just like conversations like this. I'm very shy and introverted, but like I can hold a conversation much better just from having the being forced to sit in a room with someone I don't really know
and talk to
just
them.
Talk to them. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it has a lot of value.
Yeah.
Margaret, let's switch over to you. You do comedy as well.
I do.
So let's both talk about like what's the process of creating content with that? How do you pull from? How does a thread of a thought become a joke in like something that you're doing?
Well, I constantly beat myself up for not sitting down in a structured fashion on a daily basis and writing comedy. Then for like an hour before every show, I'll sit down because I have that adrenaline of the last minute, and then I'll write.
Like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Like, I do really well with oh shit. Sometimes I think it's not good, but procrastination is my greatest like tool. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, I'll keep a running list of just stuff that pops into my head. But most things need development, and I'm still learning how to be more disciplined about going back. And, you know, my list of stuff to develop is so long, you know, it's just.
I think that's the case with any writing. I have lists of ideas, but very few have actually like been actualized.
Yeah, I actually started reading a book. I was sort of freaking out because I'm about to start hosting my show in 2 weeks. And, you know, I had originally wanted to do a pre-recorded podcast, and listening to you, I'm kind of glad I didn't because I have the setup here and I have the structure and, you know, so it's going to be easier for me. Although there's pros and cons, I'm sure, for doing it one way versus the
other.
Yeah, I agree. And I like the freedom that you probably have of like being able to do it on your own schedule or wherever you want. But so a friend of mine who also is a host of a podcast recommended, what is it called? How to Get Stuff Done or something, because I had like so many different things to do in so many different areas. And I was like flipping out because I just was about to, I don't know, combust or something because I couldn't get a handle on all the stuff I had to do. So it's like a management book, you know, like, and it talks about like open loops in your head. It actually gets into the neurochemistry of it. Like if there's a part of your brain that's responsible for like if there's anything unresolved.
It's holding space for that.
Yeah, it's gonna be working on that. It's gonna be taking up space and taking up brain energy, even if you can't address it right now. Like you're busy doing something else. So it's this whole thing about like.
And this is a book?
It's a book called, I think the author is David Allen. Getting Things Done, I think is the, it's a classic. It's
nice.
Was written many, like a few decades ago and then was revamped, I think last year, taking into account a lot of like technology stuff that can help you with that. I feel like I'm at a crossroads where I really need to get a handle on like stuff in my life, like digital and physical. And I'm also reading The Magical Art of, I know you asked about
of
comedy and I'm veering into.
Wait, finish the title.
Yes, the,
with
sorry.
Marie Kondo.
Marie Kondo, The Kondo Magical Kondo. Japanese Art of Tidying Up.
I love that book.
It's a beautiful book. It
have
really
you read
is.
That book?
I haven't. A friend of mine that
Do you want to talk about
with,
it as if you haven't read?
I'm sorry. I've read the book. And,
I'm teasing.
I could. Well,
that would be a great book to do.
I've mentioned it
for
multiple
your podcast.
Times.
In my messy living room where I record the podcast.
No. Okay. So here's the thing. As, I'm going to
really
cut you
nice.
Off.
That's okay.
I'm a reader. So I get curious about something and I'll go to the library and get every book they have on it. So I've read probably, I would say it's safe to say more than a dozen books about like feng shui or the art of placement or something similar. And this is the one book that I'm like, start here because it makes sense, but it's accessible and it's like.
It's actually very profound as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it's
you
so
know,
beautiful
it's
and concise.
So many books in that industry, you know, it seems like a very like muscular, like. Anal retentive, get it done.
Or like, I mean, and I'm not opposed to this because I think there's truth behind it, but they'll like go into like, I don't know, for the, like they'll just go into like, here's an hexagram and here's all these things. And like, that's legitimate and it has a place if you're going, like you're going to be a person going into other people's homes. But I think for somebody to like just be able to clean up their own space, like you don't need to know that. And a lot of feng shui books have like entire sections dedicated to that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or like the I Ching, like using I Ching and like mountain lake, like incorporating, like it's interesting. And yes, if you're like going to do that for a living, you should probably know that. But just like the average Joe trying to clean up his bedroom does not need to read, you know.
Yeah,
chapters
I was surprised. I was surprised.
Is my opinion
how deeply she gets into it's. It's almost like a spiritual book. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a spirituality to it of like a person confronting their entire life via the objects in
you've surrounded
my
yourself
home.
With.
Yeah, and the mm-hmm. reasons you have for keeping them and what it means to let it go and. And really, like, making those decisions, because that was the thing. I've known for a long time that I have a lot of excess possessions that
you
I want to let go
of. Everyone else. Yes.
But the
you're
thought,
not alone, by the way.
I did not know how to go about.
Yeah, she gives you a place to start.
And the whole idea of, you know, going item by item and basing the decision on a pure emotional response that you have.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. So I'm starting tomorrow.
Wonderful.
This is the book where it's like suggests picking up every item yeah. and being like, does this bring me joy?
Is yeah, she's like, start yeah. with your shirts. And the logic behind yeah. that, she explains in Spark Joy, a companion novel, and it's got little illustrations, which is always fun. But she's like, I have people start with their shirts or things that are closest to their hearts because you can feel that stronger. So she's like, I kind of help people tap into that intuition, that response. And so she like starts with shirts and bras and undershirts and then like moves to like pants and then like skirts, but she and like past clothes into like, and she's like, leave papers for last because like for some reason people have the hardest time judging, you know, does this bring light into my life, or like, do I need it? Whatever. Yeah. Anyways, it's interesting and beautiful, like just fun, easy to read.
I learned how to fold socks.
Yeah. And how to fold.
I love it.
Or I love, but there's like this innocence, but like, oh, of course. Of like, if you sit with a piece of clothing, the clothes will tell you how it wants to be folded. And part of you's like, huh. But like, I've had this experience of like, this shirt does not want to be folded like this. And I change it and it's like happier. And I'm like, I am anthropomorphizing, but not really. And also, I was going to mention, just like it. I lost my train of thought. Well, you know, folding things.
It's okay. It does sound really fruity, you know, like letting item of clothing.
The thing that I was going to, I came back, expressing gratitude. Yeah. So for the things you're keeping, like, thank you, I love you. Things that you're giving away, like, thank you for keeping my body warm and dry. I don't want you in my life anymore, but I want you to go on to, like, whatever comes next to you. And you're like, that's so hokey. But it's also, like, beautiful and sweet, and something that didn't translate from the Eastern world over to the Western world. Of like, I say thanks to my computer sometimes, and I'm like, I'm a weirdo, but also I think there's something to it. Like, you know, just.
Well, at the heart of it, I think, is like a kindness and love, you know, because the idea is if you're.
Isn't this a practice of monks? Don't they be like, thank you, broccoli, thank you, like, door handle, thank you, toilet? Is that a thing?
I think so. I've heard
I've never heard of that.
Certain groups of monks.
I'm sure there's like, I'll have a monk on the show.
It's up there with like doing the whole sand art thing that takes 3 days and then just destroying it and just getting used to just being like, that was a beautiful thing, but now it's gone and that's okay.
Non-attachment.
Yeah.
I get very attached to things.
I think most of the Western world does. Honestly, I'm like, I think that's a big difference.
And ownership is like the root of so much of my like resentment and frustration. Yeah. I'm like, that's mine. And I'm like, like, darn, there I did it again.
Well, I think the thought too is like, if you have too much stuff, you, number one, you don't know what you own. I discovered I had 3 sets of Allen keys after, you know, I went out and bought
just in case one, you know,
and then I realized later I already had 3, and that if you pare down to what really brings you joy, you'll be able to appreciate it. Like, a lot of my most prized possessions are buried, you know?
Valid.
And I think I might practice piano more when I actually
can when it's accessible. Do you own a piano?
I have a keyboard.
That's something I miss. I moved from Salt Lake City, Utah, and most of my friends had a piano, and that's something that I was surprised I missed, was just like inaccessibility of a piano in my life. Not that I'm good at playing or anything, but every now and again it's fun to sit down and like make a sound that's not like awful.
I have one that I forget what it's called, when it's
like the drop weight or whatever.
Yeah,
the weighted keys.
Yeah, so it's pretty close to playing a piano. Nice. They're pretty easy to come by if you can't get an actual piano. I think there was a piano available to me sometime in the last couple of years. I passed on it.
It's a lot, especially if you're moving around at all. Like, I don't think it's wise to get a piano. But that's my opinion. Kevin, have you read any good books lately?
Lately, what have I read?
Because we're talking about books that you read lately, and then while you're thinking, I got sucked into a series of novels by Louis L'Amour, and so my whole world has been the Wild West and like settling the frontier, and I like read it whenever I have a moment to read, and I'm like, this is like a really silly thing to be reading so much, but. That's where my reading has been. It's the Kilkenny series from Louis L'Amour.
Okay. And it's all about just like westward expansion and.
Kind of like it's kind of a repetitive story, but just like some bad guys come in and they're like trying to steal cattle and like push people off their land because it's the Wild West. And it's basically like, if you're on land, then it's yours.
Is it like Deadwood or something? Did you ever watch that show?
Just like spaghetti westerns in general. I mean,
there's a niche for it, you know.
I love those old westerns. So.
I mean, I'm reading it every time I have a spare minute to read. So I think it's funny because that's the kinds of, it's kind of also what I grew up with. I grew up in Salt Lake City, but I grew up with a father who was like, this is maybe mean to say, no, he wanted to be a cowboy and mm-hmm. he wanted to be a farmer. And so a lot of those elements of like the Wild West were just like incorporated to my childhood. And I was like, yeah, yeah. It's shaped me.
Yeah, the last book I finished was 1984, which I was rereading.
That's been on my list for a long time.
Have you not read it yet?
I
read it for the first time when I was like 13, and I was like a Boy Scout at camp and just like reading this book, and like Scoutmaster would be like, why are you reading that? You're 13. Like, yeah. don't be cynical yet. I read it now and got no surprise a lot more out of it as a, you know, 27-year-old than I was as a 13-year-old. But I'd read that one before. I thinking now, the last book I read that was like first time reading it that like really got my attention is this series of books called The Last Policeman, which is like a detective type of mystery story where there's a cop in it's, it actually I started reading it. It takes place in Concord, New Hampshire, which is the town next to where I grew up. Mm-hmm. So I love it because this guy clearly spends a lot of time there or lives there himself, because all of the like. The details of like certain streets are like to the T, like those stores are right there in a line. But what I love about it is that it's a detective. The first one's called The Last Policeman. He's trying to solve a murder. There's like a body found at a McDonald's. But the twist is that there is an asteroid the size of Texas that's going to hit the Earth in like 7 months. So most of the world is just turning into chaos and people are just trying to spend their last 7 months wisely. A lot of suicides because people just don't want to be around for the impact. And everybody's just asking him, why are you wasting your time solving a murder when mm-hmm. we're all going to die in 7 months? And it's just – that's just who he is. He's just like the one last good cop trying to do stuff. So it's just got this like interesting layer of he's trying to solve a murder mystery in a world that everybody's going to be dead in a few months. I just read the second one, which I think is called Countdown City. And it's the whole world is like they've pinpointed where it's going to hit. And like certain cults are popping up that want to go to where the asteroid is going to hit because they think some crazy religious alien experience is going to happen. Ships of immigrants are coming across the sea under the guise of like, oh, you can come to America. It's on the opposite side of the world where it's going to happen. I think they figure out it's going to land in like Indonesia or something like that. So all these like Indonesian immigrants are coming over on boats. And then you find out the U.S. government is just sinking the boats and it's like,
oh my gosh,
crazy chaos. And the whole time there's one cop who's just trying to do his job as a cop. That's like his way of coping. It's a really interesting twist on like the old like hard-boiled detective okay. story. So I recommend it. The Last Policeman. I think his name is... oh, shoot. I can't remember his name now. Benjamin something, but really, really great series of books. I'm about to start the third one probably after I finish whatever I'm reading now.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing. So we're actually – we have 10 minutes left. Can you believe it?
Wow.
Time flies when you're having fun. Yeah, I have an hour show.
So. I can't even believe it.
It I like
seems
to...
like it's been 10 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I think that's good.
It's a good sign.
So I like to end my shows with a rapid-fire series of questions about books. You're welcome to say I don't know, or we can talk about it. We'll see what happens. What book have you not gotten around to reading?
The Fat Book with the Red Cover by Robert Caro about New York. It's like a I'm blanking on the name.
Fat Book.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
I have no idea. That's I love the description.
The Power Broker. The Power Broker.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard of it.
That's what I want to read.
The Power Broker.
I haven't.
I'm trying to think what I've had on the shelf. I know I've had The Trial and the Castle by Kafka. Franz Kafka. I've had that on my shelf.
Do you like Kafka?
I read The Metamorphosis is really interesting. I read America, which I guess is like the third one in that series of whatever those Kafka books. I think they're really interesting, and those are two books that like I've wanted to dive into. So but it's just such a daunting book that's been sitting on my shelf that I haven't gotten into it yet.
We all have those books. I've discovered everyone has them, and I start to feel hopeless, and then I'm like, oh wait, there's so many books.
Yeah.
What books do you remember your parents reading to you?
Ferdinand.
Oh, I Ferdinand love the Ferdinand.
It's,
yes.
It's one of my favorite. Both my cousins just had kids, and I've been meaning to buy them their own copies.
So
I love that book.
I've been really into tattoos lately, and I've been toying with the idea of getting Ferdinand somewhere in my body. Because
oh, really? Laying in the flowers?
Yeah,
just like
of
that
course.
Last,
the laying in the flowers.
Yeah.
I'm sure so many people have that, but, you know, literary tattoos.
I don't know anybody who has a Ferdinand.
You don't know anyone personally? Well,
not personally.
That's all
so
I need to know. I'm going to make an appointment.
Yeah,
just kidding. How about you? Any books coming to mind your parents read to you?
I know my mother read to me, but I don't remember the titles. Although right. I had, I think I'm a lot older than you guys, and I had these. Well, I'm sure they had pop-up books later on, but oh. I had the most fabulous pop-up books. Mm-hmm. They were so great. You turn the page and just this elaborate castle appears Ooh. With – Oh, I was
as a kid.
Really
there is
those.
Nothing better than a good pop up book.
Yeah,
especially anything with like monsters or dragons with tongues that like mm-hmm. move, and you're like, hee, hee.
Yeah,
you like open and close the book like 20 times, like never gets old. Never
I
gets old.
Still had those. Maybe I'll go buy a pop up book.
Swell. Let's see. Do you have any rituals or routines based around your reading or writing? Huge question. Discuss. Just right. kidding.
I know for me, what probably my favorite thing of living about living in a city where there's subways is I'll just read on the train every time I'm on the train, unless yeah. it's so crowded that I can't
you're standing.
Physically open the
yeah,
book.
You're a sardine.
But that's really the only ritual I have. For writing, I also wish I was disciplined enough to say
everyone's
for,
really
yeah. like, yeah. But I've also gotten better at, you know, even if I'm at work, like I can like be thinking out ideas mm-hmm. and then I usually like to write in a notebook. So if I mm-hmm. have the notebook next to me, I'll just write
Jot
it all out.
Things,
I used to
yeah.
be very meticulous and just like, I'm gonna write down every single word that's gonna be in this joke, or I'm gonna outline mm-hmm. everything.
And now you do like highlights and
now
you're
it's
like,
highlights, it's,
I remember.
A, it's an outline at best, mm-hmm. and then it's like then I'll go back later and like actually write that script idea mm-hmm. or whatever the joke idea might be. So it's kind of like an ever-flowing thing. I've kind of forgiven myself and I've given up on the idea of having a regular thing every day because every mm-hmm. day can be so different.
Yes.
So it's just kind of what I can.
I appreciate that you've accepted that because I'm yeah. still working through that transition of like, well, today I did good and it's like, no, this is where yeah. I'm at today. And tomorrow I might sleep in till 10:30 mm-hmm. and then race to work. Like, whatever. Yeah. I have to like acknowledge and have self-compassion for yeah. the good days and the bad.
I've definitely learned that as long as I have something that I can go work on, like that's all. Even if I'm like, oh, I have nothing I can add for this joke right now. It's like, oh, but I had that script idea. Let's go work on that. Mm. So that definitely, that's one thing. I always have like a plan B if I can't work on plan A.
Swell. Anything coming to mind for you, Mark?
Sadly, the only reading ritual I have is throwing out like 3 cubic feet of New Yorkers at one time that are all mostly unread. But
yeah, I wish I was the person that read them because I like so admire people that send
week.
Me articles. Yeah. And then I just, yeah, I'm the same way. I get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
but I also have the digital edition. And so usually if something's really interesting, I'll get wind of it from online and I'll go and find
way.
It on mm-hmm. the app like after I've already thrown out
yeah,
the
yeah.
article.
That's good. It's changing the world, but maybe in good ways, this whole digital e-reader thing. I don't know if you have an opinion on it. Let's see. From talking to people, I feel like a lot of people have a book that like helped them transition through puberty. So you're reading this book that may or may not be more mature than you're used to, and you like have a shift and you're like, oh, like I feel things or I'm thinking something new. Is there a book that comes to mind that kind of like hit you hard when you were a teenager?
I think one that definitely comes to mind is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Ah, yes.
Yep. I'm sure that's a common answer. I feel like a lot of 12, 13-year-olds discover that book.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. But it's worth it. It's I love that as an answer.
It definitely shaped my sense of humor a lot. It's one of those books. Actually, I'm about due to read all of them again. I tend to read them every 4 years, and it's interesting. Douglas Adams was so great because
awesome.
There are jokes.
They're
in
for
there.
Everyone.
They are. And then you read it again 4 years later, and it's like there's a whole new layer of jokes that you didn't even see the first time. But it's definitely one that, like, when I was 13, I was like, oh, this is one of those. And it was one of those books that, like, if you feel like an outcast 13-year-old kind of loner, like, there's you meet the other kid who's like, you've read that book?
Now, yeah.
We're still
Instant.
Best friends.
Yeah. Awesome. Anything coming to mind for you?
Was he the author who had something to do with naming Generation X?
Oh.
Douglas Adams? I don't
no.
think so, no.
Okay.
Is that the Scientology author? What's his name?
L. Ron Hubbard?
Yeah, that's the one.
Generation X?
Yeah, no. I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm just speculating.
Well, I only mention it because I thought he had something to do with it, and I am a Generation X, so I wasn't 12 or 13. That mm-hmm. that book came out when I was already fully adult, so I'm more of like the Judy Blume generation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for sure, you know, I read all
that's
her
a confession
I devoured
of mine.
All
I
of
still haven't
books.
Read Judy Blume. She's one of those like people I haven't touched yet, and yet she's been so influential in the literary world.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Let's do one more question, see what happens. Let's see. I have a list. What book do you most often gift or recommend?
George Saunders. Huh. The, oh gosh, it's got a weird title. Do you want to go while I look it up?
Sure, sure. Most often, there's two, and I'll keep it short because I know we're running out of time. One is Faulkner's Light in August. I personally love that book because it's just all these outcast loner characters and their story. I highly recommend it, especially if you've ever felt like kind of a loner. It's just all these loners with like deep backstories that I love. Awesome. Another one that I always recommend is this newer book called The Water Thief. Uh-huh. This guy basically wrote a rebuttal to Atlas Shrugged, which shows the downside of corporations taking over. And it's this like cool, I love dystopian books. And this one is all about like everything has been corporatized and to the point that even rainwater, you can't collect your own rainwater because water's a commodity that you don't have an automatic right to. And then it's this whole amazing, you know, what happens if we let corporate culture keep going at the rate it is.
Did you find that book?
Yeah, it's George Saunders, the short story writer. He wrote The Very Persistent Gappers of Fripp. It's an illustrated children's book, but for adults. And
oh, nice.
It's gorgeous.
Wonderful. Thank you guys so much for being here. I'm on all the socials, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Listen to me on Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom. Rate the show. Yeah, all of the things. And then I'll do links to you guys. Let me know if you want me to plug anything for you.
Thanks, Juan.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I want to see this world. I want to see it boil. It's only 4 degrees. It's only 4 degrees. It's only 4 degrees. It's only 4 degrees. Crying for water. I wanna see the fish go belly up in the sea.